Hey everybody, welcome to Killer Cereals, live from the Whiskey Daily, with the Daily Pint.
We've been here a little while, no, kidding. We're at the Daily Pint, we're at the Santa Daily, Monica, Daily Tony Pints, Jones.
Ryan Parker, and we are talking about The Path, and this is the finale of season one. And
the last Path podcast for us before we move on to our next show.
Yeah, but the other news is that definitely there's going to be a season two. Hulu has signed on for season two of The Path.
Great news.
And Jessica Goldberg, as you'll hear in the interview that's forthcoming on this episode, we congratulate her on that. It was an exciting time. We were in her office on the very day that they announced season two, which was a lot of fun.
That was a lot of fun.
And, you know, the thing about The Path, this first season is, I would say, looking back, it got better and better. Like, it not only sustained the intensity of the drama for 10 episodes, and, you know, maybe you look back, and there were a couple episodes you look back on that were bridge episodes that were kind of moving the plot along, but, man, episodes like 7, 8, 9, and 10, that stuff just leaves you breathless. It's just incredible.
I totally agree.
I will say this about meeting with Jessica Goldberg, the creator of The Path. A wonderful human being. Like, just exudes a very, very
authentic.
Yeah. Not.
This is coming from a place of deep thought.
Not Hollywood. She's like a single mom.
Yeah.
Who's a writer, you know, who writes shows. I mean, great. It was great.
Yeah. And I think to do some more reflection on kind of a big picture take, and of course we could do even another episode of this about just the show as a whole. You know, I've said all along, it's a show about a cult that's not about a cult, mm-hmm. right? As provocative and as potentially scandalous as a lot of those punishments were that we saw in the early episodes,
yeah.
How often did we see them in 6, 7, 8, 9, 10? Never.
No.
There's so much about that life that invites inspection or analysis that we didn't get because we were so involved in the humanness and the human drama of the show. Like she says in the interview in a minute, it's about a marriage.
Right. And what we even find out, what we even see in episode 10, one of the things that comes out in episode 10, and we'll hit it just a few of the highlights before we cut to that interview, is, you know, Eddie's reached a breaking point. He can no longer hide from his wife the fact that he has major doubts. And he says, there's got to be room for fucking doubt. And no, not in Sarah.
Yeah.
He says to Sarah, you know you don't believe this stuff. And she says, you don't know me.
Yeah.
And what you don't know is whether Sarah's a real believer or not. I mean, whether she has doubts and she's just pushing them down. She refuses to voice them. But I will say this. They say to Eddie, and to your point, they say to Eddie, you need to go through a process. And he's like, nope, I'm not. He says to Richard, his discipler, basically, his guide, I'm not going through a process.
Yep.
You're not putting me back in that room. This is bigger than that. You can't scare me out of my doubts.
I'm going to tell you something. There are a lot of things I can't say in life. I'm not a parent. There are struggles that you as a father have endured, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
There are challenges that you face. There's joys that you've experienced that I don't know and may never know. And that's okay.
Yep.
But I'll tell you one thing. I sure as shit would never leave my wife for a religious movement.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is Sarah saying...
She's choosing her religion.
And it's not just leaving your spouse. It's, I sure as shit am not going to give up, if I ever have a child, I would never give that child up
for
anything.
For a belief system.
Let alone for a belief system.
But Sarah is so invested in this belief system. And here's what's amazing, though. Her mother...
Her character's great.
Her mother is even more invested.
Because her mother's like, hit the bricks, Eddie.
Yeah, and her mother, even to her own husband, like to Eddie's father-in-law, is like, nope, the process won't... He's dead to us. He's dead to us now. It reminds me of... You won't even remember this, but the old Neil Diamond movie, the whatever singer.
The jazz singer?
The jazz singer, remember?
What do you mean? I'm a movie nut.
How old are you? And his dad rips his, you know, rips his garments.
It's a remake of the original Jazz Singer. Do you remember that one?
No, I don't remember that one. I've heard of it.
No? Okay.
But, you know, it's that kind of, the parent says no. But then, later in episode 10, the mom says to Sarah, like, it's, you know, it will get better. You've made the right choice. It will not get fucking better, she says. It will not get better. I loved Eddie, and then she says in the present tense, I loved him, I love him, fuck you, she says to her mom, and then to her brother, and fuck you all, and storms up.
So yes, Sarah is, even in her stubbornness and in her fervent faith, I mean, that's what makes her an interesting character for us. I mean, we're not talking about a lot of other people in the movie. We're not talking about Joy.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
She's just a weird, I mean, she's like a lot of people we know. Or new.
Yep.
Sarah is a grenade away from the Taliban. She's that level of belief.
She is.
So, you know, that's interesting.
But I think
we could talk about this whole episode. Now the more that we talk about it, I'm like, we should do an episode just for 110, and then we should do the special episode with the interview.
Here's the thing about Sarah, though. But she also... She's not one-dimensional because multiple times toward the end of season one, she kisses Cal. She knows it's wrong.
Yeah.
She does it anyway.
Yeah.
Remember earlier in season one?
There was a whole bunch of porn found in Bin Laden's house.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And remember earlier, she said, I have nothing to repair. I have nothing to atone for, basically. You know, she's saying, I've never sinned because I grew up in the movement. Eddie has sinned. You've sinned. And we're like, we've watched you sin. Why are you not being honest?
Why aren't you planting a tree?
Yeah. Why aren't you being honest with the fact that you've cheated on your husband by making out with Cal multiple times? So I think it's... Before we cut to the interview, we got to talk about at least one more thing. And that's...
Well, I want to talk about...
Yeah, what do you want to talk about?
I want to talk about the reference to Jesus as a prophet who walks in the light.
After having been said earlier in the episode, why do you keep bringing up Jesus? What's he ever done for us? He didn't save my sister.
Sean says that.
And then in that same lunchroom where he yells at his mom about Jesus, later at another meal, Cal walks in and talks about reconciliation.
Yeah.
And quotes Jesus, one of the great prophets of the light.
I know.
So I mean, we talked about that Jessica Goldberg.
Jessica talk a little bit about that with that kind of interfaith component.
Yeah.
Which is, again, just showing her thoughtful approach to this story.
Yeah.
So what was the last thing you wanted to talk about before we sign off on the path and lead into this wonderful interview conversation?
Eddie doesn't know if he's having a psychotic break. He's seeing visions. Sarah is also...
He's seeing visions, but he is in Peru.
He's seeing visions back in New York. Sarah's also seeing visions. Sarah's seeing the owl. Eddie's seeing a snake and a dead bird. Okay, he goes to Richard. Richard says, this is the light trying to get through to you. Eddie says, fuck you, I knew that's what you would say, and drives off in his Mustang. And Richard yells behind him, either you acknowledge that, or it will destroy you. Mm-hmm. Okay? That's foreboding for season two, for sure, what Richard says there, okay?
Totally.
Next, we see Eddie and Cusco trying to find out what happened to Silas.
Getting to the root of the problem.
His iguana is dead, his bird is dead.
Or he's also testing his vision from
episode one. He starts to see, so he goes back to the scene of the crime in some ways.
Yes.
Then he walks down the hallway, opens the door, Dr. Steve's bed is empty. I think for sure Steve is dead. Cal is going to keep the memory of Steve alive.
Yeah, and then guess what?
But he killed Steve. We're going to find out later he's killed Steve. Steve is not dead.
Steve is vertical.
Or is Eddie having yet another hallucination?
Another hallucination.
And does Eddie become the
new
Steve?
And this is why we watch season two.
Oh, my gosh.
Hey, this makes me think, I hate to throw the wrench in this game, this makes me think of your boy... Pete Rollins.
Yeah.
And what's behind the curtain.
Right. Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Get Pete watching this show for season two.
What if there's nothing behind the curtain?
What if there's nothing? What if it's another hallucination?
And what if that's the point of the curtain? is the tearing of the veil.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening. We really appreciate it. Please share and subscribe and all that good stuff. We're on iTunes now. We're going to let this lead into the interview with Jessica. We hope you enjoy it and check back real soon for our next killer cereal. So we're here with Jessica Goldberg, the creator of The Path.
Thank you.
The latest killer cereal.
Congratulations, being renewed for a second season.
Thank you.
Yep. So I thought we would begin by talking about how you got to The Path.
Where
this comes from. And
yeah, strangely, it comes from such a strange place. I had, lost a parent and gotten divorced within the same year. And I had this experience that I kept thinking about the story Cal tells in episode one of Plato's Cave. I just, like, you know, that my life had been shadows. Like, I just had this moment of feeling that way. And I kept thinking about that story, and I kept, because I'm a writer, and I was going through these sort of this existential crisis of my own, trying to figure out how could I dramatize this experience. And it's so mysterious writing, like how you get from point A to point B. But I sort of came up with this idea that that you're in this one world and you believe everything is true, and then one day you wake up and it all feels like shadows. So I set it in a religion, which had been religion movements. I grew up in Woodstock, New York, like in the 70s, 80s, which was like hotbed of countercultural social utopian experiments. And I was, sort of always very, I found them very seductive, actually. Mm. Like just the rainbow people and the Rajneesh people and the, just people striving for some more authentic way of living their lives. So I put my feelings in that world.
I remember when I was, I'm 48, so I remember having that, growing up in like a mainline liberal Protestant home, mm-hmm. but watching like late at night when, remember when we all got cable for the first time or whatever, and then watching Trinity Broadcasting Network uh-huh. late at night and watching these people in this other version of Christianity that was completely foreign to me, yeah. right? But I was like so intrigued by it.
Yeah.
And these people, like their entire lives, they had a whole like framework and linguistic system
yeah.
that was different than mine. And I think that's one of the interesting things about this religion you've created mm-hmm. is it has like lingo.
Yes.
That they all know.
Yes.
So there must have been a lot of like backstory work that yeah. you did in prepping yeah. this religion.
Yeah. I mean, when I wrote the pilot, I wrote it just on spec in my room, but for, usually you sort of sell something and then but I just decided I want to write something for myself. And then once Hulu was interested in the show, I put together, there were four writers, four of us, and we basically wrote a Bible. We decided we better figure out what this thing is, how it works, and have this groundwork. And, of course, it evolves based on some story. But we did spend a lot of time literally writing a Bible.
So when you're working on that, and were these writers that you had known?
Some of them I knew, and then one of them I got from Rectify.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's another killer cereal, by the way. So when you are building this world, or at least this belief system, are you looking at other faiths and saying, trying yeah. to find the commonalities? Because Kyle made a good point in our interview with him, where he said, there's usually a through line between a lot of faiths, and maybe yeah. it's the light, or it's this, or what was that process like?
Yeah, we looked at, honestly, like, while people call it a cult, we really took a lot from Judeo-Christian, beliefs, and then, we looked at some more Eastern religions to to steal some stuff, and then we, you know, made up stuff too. But basically, I think, you know, there's a lot of things. I mean, you guys probably know this more than I do, but, you know, religions have in common. Mm-hmm. And so we knew we needed, like, the origin story and what happens when you die and, you know, what you do when you sin and what you do, you know, just the basic things that most religions covered, we tried to cover.
Which is, there's a beautiful scene, and I guess this is episode 8 or 9, where Eddie can say the Franciscan prayer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love that. It's my favorite prayer ever.
It's an incredible scene.
It's the most beautiful prayer, I think. I mean,
They're on the walk. They're on the walk, and they're in a homeless shelter. Yeah. And
we'll talk more about that too.
Yeah. And he starts, and you can see Hawk looks at him like,
you know this.
Who is this? My dad who knows this. It's just like that's one of those relationships that's so amazing to watch, this father-son relationship. Mm-hmm. And there's this line, you know, in 109, there's got to be some fucking room for doubt.
Yeah.
Eddie says, right? And it's almost like, for me, I watch that, I'm like, that in some way is the hinge of the show. Mm-hmm. Because he doesn't want to leave. I mean, first, I will say also that then, as the dominoes start to fall after that, I'm a divorced, you know, dad with kids. And, like, that scene, it's rare that I see that scene, that trope of, like, daddy's going to be moving out. You'll see him every Sunday. I mean, there a lot of times we're like, oh, my God, give me a break. That one, I was like, I was texting him while I was watching it. Like, I can barely watch this.
Yeah. Well, it was funny because I had gone through this divorce. So for me, also, the show was about a marriage breaking up and when people stop believing in something together.
Yeah. And then, but you can see Hawk just like, well, he's 15, you know, he's like this pendulum swinging back and forth, like, I'm leaving for this girl, no, I'm coming back, or, you know, I don't want to ever talk to my parents again, I want to go on this 250-mile walk with you, you know? Yeah. And so there's something also that seems very true about the adolescent. Like, though we've both done, like, youth ministry with adolescent kids in the past.
Nailed it.
Right?
The show nails it, yeah.
And there's something about the adolescent quest for spirituality that's very different than the adults grappling with spirituality.
Interesting.
Yeah, because so, I don't want to force you into saying anything or answering a question that you don't want to answer. But when I watch the show and I see the way Sarah treats Hawk, and I think about some of the experiences I've seen, not necessarily had, but we talk a lot about child abuse in church, and people automatically think about the Catholic sex abuse scandal.
Right.
But there's child abuse going on in faiths across the country. I mean, in all sects of Christianity that are, it's psychological. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, that when you're couching these very natural biological tendencies into sin, that's a brokenness that's being created there that I think is real problematic. And I think there's a little bit of that show with Hawk.
With Hawk, and I mean, I also think with Cal, because I feel, I mean, you know, hopefully now that we have season 2, we can go more into his backstory, but I do think he's a person who has, you know, sexuality, these things are bad, you know, these are sins, and that's why he's so, can't effed up, you know, like, why it's so hard for him to have, like, a normal relationship with a woman.
Even Mary in episode 10 calls him out on that, like, like, you understand me.
Yes.
Because you're like me.
Like, she says something like, you see the darkest corners of me, and I need to be with somebody.
Yes, like them.
Like me, who's broken like me. And he says, I don't believe that. I believe every. And you can tell he doesn't believe it.
Right.
When he's saying it to her.
He's a good actor.
Yeah, he's a really good actor. Yeah, it reminded me, too, of, as you see Cal's rise to power, it reminded me of another experience of when I was a kid down the street. There was an atheist. Like, I didn't know any atheists growing up in Minnesota. Like, everyone was Lutheran or Catholic and a few Jews, and that was it. Mm-hmm. But there was one guy who was atheist, but he would watch Jimmy Swaggart every Sunday morning on TV. So I asked him one time, like, why in God's name do you watch Jimmy Swaggart? You're an atheist. And he says, because when I watch Jimmy Swaggart, and he'd be up there crying, you know, and this is before he had his fall, but he said, I understand how Hitler worked. Because the guy, I can watch him as an atheist go like, he's just a charlatan. Mm-hmm. But all these people, he's so verbally persuasive, you mm-hmm. know, that he can make these people believe this stuff.
Yeah.
So there's something too about Cal where he's got these doubts and is obviously, you know, an addict and like has these deep problems. Yeah. You see a little backstory with his mom and yes. her partner,
yeah,
whatever.
Right. Yeah.
But he can turn it on.
Yeah, he can turn it on. Yeah, he has that. He has that gift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Friday Night Lights is one of my favorite shows of all time. And because it's a football show that's not about football.
Right.
Right. And it's no coincidence that The Path is a new favorite show because it's a cult show that's not about a cult.
Great.
Right?
Yes.
So talk about that. Like, talk about the creative process of saying, how are we going to resist being what we don't want to be?
Well, you know, I sort of learned how to be like a TV writer from Jason Kadams, mm-hmm. who did Friday Night Lights, and he has this amazing way of breaking story, which is always from character and always from their interactions. And always, like, we go, you know, we'll go through an episode, and you always think, like, but what are they really feeling right now? You know what I mean? And I think that sort of helps you get away from, like, imposing theme. And then themes emerge, and it's really thrilling and exciting. But if you go from, like, you know, this is a movement, but it's about a marriage, you know, and it's about being a kid in this kind of environment. So I think if you work just like Friday Night Lights was, you know, if you work from character, you can avoid sort of making your show one-dimensional.
Without giving anything away on that, I'm, you know, I assuming, like, for the sake of argument, Dr. Steve being vertical at the end of season
that's
one.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Instead of horizontal.
That's a good way to put it.
Means maybe we're going to find out more about him, but there was just this little hint of his backstory that we didn't know at the beginning of the walk, that it starts at this military base.
Yes.
And that he was doing, you know, Eddie tells Hawk, like, he was doing these crazy psychological experiments, and one day he just decided to mm-hmm. walk away. And mm-hmm. he just started walking, and he obviously ended up 250 miles north in upstate New York and founding this deal. So is that something like that, like, back when you were writing the Bible for the Myers movement,
we always knew that he had been a psychiatrist for Vietnam vets and that he experimented on them. And we found that this is a true thing that happened. And so we liked the idea of somebody who had a lot of sin in his past, one day walking out of their life and searching. And, you know, it was like 1973, so it was a time when he just walked out in the street and everyone was searching. So, you know, and he, you know, we sort of imagined he accrued this little band of followers as he went and then had his break.
Although after, you know, the fate of Silas, you think the founding generation may be a little bit in danger at this point.
Yes. Well, that is one of the questions, like, I always sought to answer for the show in the first season was, you know, when just the researching of these cults, you know, they start around like one sort of charismatic leader and then that person dies and it's over. So if you can take it to generation two, you're in business.
Yeah. That's right.
Business.
Well,
literally.
Yeah, yes, I mean, yeah. Well,
yes,
this
it becomes
is,
more
yes. This is like actually Max Weber, the first ever sociologist, he did a lot of his work about religion.
Uh-huh.
And he talked about what he called it is the routinization of the charisma. That was his mm-hmm. phrase.
Wow.
What he meant was in the first generation, the charisma, the gifts strike, and they're given out freely.
Mm-hmm.
But then the founding generation of a religious movement dies, and the second generation comes along, and they're like, you know, we need to, like, I got a mortgage to pay and a car payment, so, like, I will baptize your babies if you pay my salary.
Yes.
And so then they become guardians of the sacred things, like the communion wafer or the charisms or whatever. And
the latter.
The latter, right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You see it happen, you know, you see it. I know it's not Scientology.
But,
like,
obviously,
been in the, but there's all this Scientology stuff in the water, right, with Going Clear documentary
and
stuff
and
like
that.
And that
was clearly a first generation, second generation, like one of them that made the...
One of the few that's made it
made
as
it.
Strongly as it has.
But you could say that about a lot of accepted religions, like more, you know. I mean, I don't want to say
that's right.
No, that's right.
Please say, because the kind of follow up thought I had about, okay, so your show's there's a cult in the show, but it's not about cults. Mm-hmm. And I said from like episode one or two, if the path doesn't make you, if you're a person of faith watching the path and it doesn't make you think critically of your own faith, mm-hmm. then you're not watching it right. Mm-hmm. You're just like mindlessly, you're watching Aaron Paul hoping he says bitch or something.
That,
you
know? A lot of people want that.
But yeah.
Can you get Aaron Paul and take his shirt off?
But I watch it and I'm like, why? Okay. If there's the ladder and there's this Myers move, who's to say?
Yeah.
I mean, really, at the end of the day, that this just didn't happen in Christianity, but it was just 2,000 years ago instead of 50.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, don't like me saying that.
Even in Minnesota, you know, we just lost our most famous Jehovah's Witness this 2 weeks ago, and everyone's talking about this weird aspect of Prince's life.
Yeah.
That he was a Jehovah's Witness, and he went door to door evangelizing people. Prince.
Yeah.
Like, just a few years ago.
Interesting.
And it became a real part of, I mean, he really whole hog believed it. Okay, I want, you know, speaking of that, because religions have their own different, you know, practices and rites and stuff like that. So one thing that was intriguing to me, and maybe it was just a coincidental choice or whatever, but like, here's this religion where they drink alcohol, mm-hmm. openly smoke pot, swear, mm-hmm. but no meat.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what's the thought process when you're thinking this thing that grew up in the 70s, kind of Jesus people-y movement? I can, you know, like some things they're very pietistic about, like no meat.
Yes.
And other things are like, oh, yeah, please, no, light up
all day. Yes.
You know, that's funny that you should ask. I mean, they, to me, they really come out of the hippie generation, and that's why the pot's okay and the wine's okay. But yet other drugs are sort of condemned, I think, and so it's definitely a little bit of that, you know. I'm sure Stephen and those, you know, Gabby and Hank and the older generation sort of decided what was okay.
Not giving this up.
What was okay? They were not going to give those things. But Cal definitely, and you know, now that there is that, I think that would be things he would want to remove. Like, he feels like those aren't, you know, acceptable to this new time that we're in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He would like to put collars on the shirts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he'd like to make it a little more corporate.
Put collars on the shirts.
Yeah, oh, like it happens in episode 10. Cersei's, you're wearing a tie.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Yeah. Wow, look how far we are from the 70s hippies. Like, he's meeting with investment bankers.
Yes.
And
we got to get a 401k.
No, I'm telling you, like Max Weber says, this happens in every religion.
Yes. And one of the things we'd love to explore going forward is just that thing of becoming a religion. Like, technically,
more
with
salaries,
the IRS.
Right.
With the IRS.
We talked about it in an earlier episode because... earlier in the first season, there is some of this. Cal is like, we need to become more established. We need to be taken more seriously. I'm going to do a media interview. Oh, Dr. Steve said never do media. And he's like, well, times have changed. We need to do media.
Yeah.
And there have been, even in our lifetimes, like the Reorganized Church of Latter-day Saints, so the RLDS, with the people who stayed in Independence, Missouri, and didn't follow Brigham Young all the way to Utah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they changed their name to the Community of Joy, I think. Something like that, Community of Christ Church. And then they basically submitted their beliefs to a bunch of evangelical leaders like Billy Graham and people like that and said, will you please start considering us a normal Christian religion? We're more Christian than we are Mormon.
Interesting.
Right? And that's happened with like three or four different sects that were really peripheral to Christianity and tried to, and for some it's, you know, worked, and for others, you know, I think a lot of Christians, Orthodox Christians, still very uncomfortable with Mormons and with Jehovah's Witnesses, like, no, you're you're outside the fold. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you can see that.
Yeah.
Tension. And some of the old timers in the Myers movement are like, why should we open these gates? Like, this is our little thing.
Yeah.
We're just building the garden for ourselves.
Yeah.
Cal's like, I see bigger things.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think we got time for a couple more questions.
Cool.
And the first, I think, is you had talked about breaking story from a place of character, mm-hmm. yet there's so much about the series that finds real-world parallels.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering if, like, the crisis with immigrant families,
mm-hmm.
The bank, you know, the kind of the economic side of things. Mm-hmm. It seems that's always in the news with people of faith, that even with faith leaders being convicted of, like, sexual improprieties, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how conscious are you of asking, okay, so episode 107 made me think, there's like three huge themes where it's like, what happens when faith and politics intersect? Mm-hmm. What happens when faith and sexuality intersect? And then what happens when faith and reason intersect?
Yeah.
How much are you imposing that on the creative process? And maybe imposing is the wrong word, but...
You know, I think when you're sort of, when we were setting out, we sort of had like milestones we wanted to get to and things like that were interesting. And I mean, I have been very interested in how... you know, religious organizations step in where our government organizations don't, and I find that very compelling reason to be part of a movement. And I love that the different churches have, you know, I think that's awesome that they've sort of taken on the mantle of human rights in a way that sometimes I feel like our government fails us completely. So I always wanted to tell that story, and then just when we start dealing with it, it gets more complicated. Strangely, I've tried to stay away. I tried to keep the sexual abuse complicated, in that I don't want to go down the road of that really gruesome, you know, cult story of like the man with five wives or that are 12. Like, to me, that's just so appalling, and I want to always keep. You know, as much as we can, like, there's definitely nothing, you know, like, gray about what Cal does in episode 7 to Silas. But for the most part, keep things complicated.
And you see that when outsiders come in for, like, in episode 10 for the wedding, you know, the character's name, but the groom's parents come in, right?
Yes.
And so they're like,
great, yeah.
Right? So then suddenly you see this, the Myers movement from outsiders who come in, they're like, this is weird, this is a cult. Oh, wait. Then he gets up, and this is another interesting thing that earlier in that episode, he says to his parents, what has Jesus ever done for us? Like, I don't believe in Jesus anymore.
Yeah.
And then 30 minutes later, Cal's in the cafeteria quoting Jesus.
Yes.
Like
yes.
One of the great prophets of light.
Yes.
He quotes Jesus. And that then the mom is like,
yeah.
Oh, I think I can take this Mary girl in and give her my veil or whatever, you know. And you think, I just saw that for a minute through those outsiders.
It's fun, the outsiders. It's really fun to have them come in.
Because they're ambivalent about it.
They have our lens of, like, you know, of you know, being not trusting them, mm-hmm. these people.
Yeah.
I would say with the news of a second season.
Yes.
Did you, early in the process, have a vision of what's to come? Like, or is that something, I mean, obviously you're actively working on that now, but as you kind of set about that spec script and writing the Bible and stuff, were you thinking, all right, here's where we could go?
I mean, I actually always had a, like, end moment of if I had seasons of where I wanted the show to go. Mm-hmm. I had an end.
Just not even going to ask.
No.
Like, so, you have the end moment of season 2.
No, I have the end moment of, like, say, well, if we, you know, I have the end moment of where I believe the show would go.
Oh man.
All together. Yeah.
That's pretty great.
That's
so
great.
It's getting there. But I hope we get to keep exploring, you know. It's just so fun to explore this stuff, and it makes you very moved by belief and then terrified of it at the same time.
Well, those of us who are watching, feel like we're living in the golden age of television, you know,
so
and with something like Hulu all of a sudden supporting like a show with great production value, incredible acting, you know, it's
great writing.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And believe me, this show, I don't know, you know, we got lucky. It's a hard show to get put on the air.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I can touch the subject. I've heard those conversations.
Wow. People are not.
Who's going to watch this, and how are we going to sell it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Faith is definitely still, especially, you know, if it's not like doesn't have its niche audience, it's a little bit of like hit the tarmac and fly away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you, seriously. Guys. Thank you so much. Yeah. It's so fun to talk to you guys. Yeah. Awesome.
Eddie, when you came to us, what did you find?
Home.
I was following me,
the future is coming. Poverty, political instability, terrorism. Everything we know will collapse. I don't want to live for this moment. I want to live forever. In the garden that we are creating here together.
What happened on your retreat?
What do you mean?
You've been acting distant since you got back.
You need to know you are everything to me.
Looking into the Myers movement.
I'm putting them on cold watch.
How about you tell me something so I know that this isn't a trap?
We don't hurt people.
You sure about that?
We who follow this path, we struggle with our relationship with the outside world. If darkness falls,
we are light.
I mean, am I gonna blow up my life because of something I don't even know, but I really saw?
You are nothing! You are nobody!
We're telling you to move to the side.
I can walk out on the street and make people believe.
With scarves of red tied round their throats to keep their little heads from falling in the snow. And I turn around and there you go. And Michael, you would fall and turn the white snow red as strawberries.